Dr. David Hampton is here. He, for three more days, is senior pastor-elect. So like, you know, Senator-elect Joe Donnelly. But eventually you go from elect to it. And this Sunday will be the installation of the Reverend Dr. David Hampton as the pastor of Light of the World Christian Church. And the events begin on tomorrow with a circle of prayer over at Christian Theological Seminary. And then a community day from 1 to 5 at the church where everybody and their brother is welcome to slide through. And then the pastoral installation with Reverend Al Sharpton. And probably, hopefully he'll wear one of them good suits that he wears on MSNBC. Dr. Hampton, welcome.
Well, thank you so much, Amos, for having me. Joy to be here.
First, your reaction, because you was around when the Mike Tyson, whatever was going on around here. Your thoughts on him coming back and starting this tour of the country with his show where he talks about his life, right, starting it here.
Well, I think it's a great opportunity for him to, you know, we all deserve a chance to reconcile and to make our lives better. We've all made mistakes. And I, from what I understand, he's done well in Las Vegas and on Broadway. And I'd love to see him here.
Is this also a teaching moment? Because obviously in listening to some of the comments, as we get closer to this, we're going to be rehashing what happened 21 years ago.
Right. You know, I think sometimes we make things just too deep and too difficult. Let the man tell his story. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't go so deep as to place him in a biblical context. Mm-hmm. It's just not that deep for me. Mm-hmm. He's a man. He's a human being who clearly has issues that he's trying to work out. Mm-hmm. And I think he's done well for himself to mature through the years. He's married, and he's dealing with a bipolar issue. So, you know, he's done well under the circumstances.
And he's been relatively honest about his, I don't know whether want, demon may be the wrong word. It may be another word to use rather than demons. But in dealing with his shortcomings.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, I think you're right. We all battle with our own demons, and he certainly has. And it takes courage to stand and to be that transparent before the country. And it gives us a chance to get to know him as a person and a human being.
So now what is happening starting tomorrow? This is you've been the longest elect. You know, you get to be senator-elect for a couple of months, governor-elect for 8 to 10 weeks. You've been elect for almost 52.
Yeah, well, you know, what I will say is the great thing about this transition is, you know, Bishop Benjamin had the wisdom and the foresight to not leave too soon but not leave too late. And we planned this transition to be a year of transition. It's been a year in which we can kind of get a handle on things, and I can learn the church and get to know the people, and he can transition in a way that that helps us both. And in a time where, unfortunately, a lot of, when I say us in the African-American community and tradition, we don't do as well a job, I don't think, at succession planning. Mm-hmm. And so this, what we were trying to accomplish is one of those rare instances in which we can almost be a model, if possible, to black churches, how it can be done right, you know, without division. Light of the World is not suffering by any means. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, we've grown over 200 new members since mm-hmm. January. Mm-hmm. And in a time of transition, that's rare. But we wanted to make sure that this was a testament to the kingdom, that that Christ was glorified in this, and that we did it right. So this was an agreed upon 1 year transition period. So whether my installation was earlier in the year or at the end of the year, we knew this was going to be a year of transition. So we're going to officially, honor God on December 2nd, this Sunday, I will officially become the pastor of Light of the World Christian Church.
So now there's like a prayer circle tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, over at Christian Theological Seminary.
Right.
At 42nd, just east of Michigan Road. And that's when the different ministries of the church are coming together?
Yeah, you know, we wanted to, of course, set the right tone. Mm-hmm. And what better way to do that than prayer? So we're going to gather at Christian Theological Seminary. President Matt Bolden has just been fabulous as he's entered into Christian Theological Seminary. Great partnership there as well. And so we're going to gather. It's the community is, of course, invited, but we've enlisted many of our ministers and ministries to gather and focus on a specific point of prayer, not only for me, but for the community, for our nation, for our president, for Bishop Benjamin, for the church, for every church in the city and country. And so we just want to petition our request to God and start this thing off right.
Then Saturday, the whole community is invited from 1 to 5 out to the church. You're going to have a whole bunch. You got the games, the food. Somebody going to do Zumba.
That's right.
Jazz, vendors, everything.
That's right. We're very excited about Community Day. You know, and again, what we're trying to accomplish is a light of the world has been a beacon of light in this city for so long. And I want to make sure that that message continues, even under my leadership. We're not going to go backwards. We're going to continue to build and go forward. So, you know, a church is open to the community. A church is the community. And so we want to invite parents and children. We're going to have a game truck for young people, various activities, you know, and we have a message, you know, mind, body, and spirit. And so there'll be something for physical activity. There'll be some spiritual enrichment going on. And we have some wonderful sponsors and vendors.
You got the whole neighborhood sponsoring you.
We're trying to. You know, Crystal DeHaan is there.
Your neighbor across the street.
That's right. Wonderful neighbor.
Yeah.
Wonderful neighbor.
And this is also not, because it's a family thing in ministry, so it's not only you as pastor, but it's also your lovely wife, Hope, First Lady.
That's right. Yeah. My wife, and we have son, Gabriel, who's 7, and my daughter, who's 17. And so, you know, it's a family affair. I want everybody to know to please come out from 1 to 5. On this Saturday. We'd love to see you.
And then Sunday, the installation service at the church is meet and greet at 5.
Right.
Pray starts at 5:30. Program starts at 6, and they all warm up. And then Reverend Al, you going to ask him to preach about what he's told the president about trying to stay off the fiscal cliff? Because, you know, you've been at the White House now the last week or so.
Right. Well, you know, one of the things about Reverend Sharpton that everyone may not know is he's actually a very excellent preacher. And when he preaches, he does not preach politics. He preaches the gospel.
And the stuff he can't say on MSNBC.
Yeah, sometimes he'll say that too. But he's really not the highlight. The highlight is of course, Christ and the sacred moment of installing. I'll be only the 5th pastor in the 146-year history of that church. And so it's just a great honor. It should be a great night. Bishop Benjamin will be there to pass the torch, if you will, and he'll perform the ordination portion of the service. Jeffrey Johnson will perform the first half of the worship service. So I'm just excited about what's going to take place.
This is WTLC AM Indianapolis Afternoons with Amos. We're with Dr. David Hampton, about to be in 4 days, the senior pastor of Light of the World Christian Church. And we're also, you know, getting people's feedback on the return of Mike Tyson next February as part of his show. Somebody sent me a text message, 85620. They said, Amos, you going to try to interview Mike Tyson?
You should get him on.
We're going to try. Wait, all he can do is say no. What are you going to do to me? Knock me out? You know, I'm smart enough to duck his right hand and the left hand. I ain't done, you know, he may be retired from boxing, but I get the feeling he still can pack a punch. Let me go to the phones and Sherry. Sherry, you've been waiting patiently. Thanks for waiting.
Hi, thank you. Congratulations to the pastor.
Thank you.
God is good.
All the time.
21 years. I don't recall Mike Tyson being in any trouble since then. I might be wrong, just haven't paid attention, but you know, God is a forgiving God. And you know, Mike Tyson, he might, in his play, he might actually be talking about his walk with God. And for him to start here, where it all happened, I think that's a good idea. You know, a lot of things change, people change. I don't know what he was going through then, but to me, I didn't think that, I mean, it didn't seem like God was present in his life. But God has a way with people.
You know, it's interesting. I talked with Pastor Michael Jones a little bit yesterday about this, and he told me he was one of, you know, several pastors that would go out to Plainfield, Dr. Hampton, visiting with their members who were incarcerated out there, and they would go and visit Mike Tyson when he was there. I know Imam Muhammad Sadiq, you know, regularly visited with him. And I know that faith has off and on been a part of Mike Tyson's life, whether it was the Islamic faith or the Christian faith. I don't know where he is right now in his faith journey, so I can't really answer that definitively. And nobody really knows because the one review of this show that I read was not very complimentary. So I really want to find some other reviews and really try to get a sense of, does he mention a walk with faith, a walk with God in the context of this? That's a very, see, y'all give me great questions that if I'm even privileged to get the opportunity to talk with Mike Tyson, I'm going to have to ask you.
Right. I think it would be a good idea if you did interview.
Well, all we can do is ask. You know, it's up to them to say yes or no. But it would be funny if I get to interview him and can't interview the mayor, but I can interview Mike Tyson. That would say something right there. I appreciate it. Let me go to Earl right quick at 239-1310. Hi, Earl.
Hey, Amos. Good afternoon. How are you doing today?
I'm fine.
Hey, I can guarantee you two things about the Mike Tyson show. My wife and I were actually in New York earlier this summer. Didn't get a chance to see the show. I'm actually glad he's bringing it to Indy. But I can guarantee you two things. One, it's going to be something you've never seen before. And two, whoever his managing person is not going to book him a room at the Canterbury.
That was a good one.
Somehow, I think it's either going to be the Conrad. It might be this new hotel they're building in the City Way called the Alexander.
Yeah.
Or it's going to be the JW.
Yeah, probably JW.
Or if he were smart, rent a house for 3 or 4 days.
Yeah.
Look how many people rented their house for the Super Bowl.
You got that right. They made big money on that.
How many people would rent their house? Yeah, I have a serious house now. To Mike Tyson, yeah. You know, for like $5,000-$6,000 a day.
It was crazy. When we were in Tampa, people were renting their house when the Super Bowl was down in Tampa. They were renting their houses out for $10,000 for the weekend.
Yeah, that might do it there. If I had that kind of house, I'd think about doing it. Anyway, I appreciate the call. Thank you. 239-1310. 239-1310 is Afternoon's Name. We'll take a break. We'll come back with Dr. David Hampton. Also ask you about Mike Tyson. So far, the reactions has been positive. Now, I don't know whether that's going to translate to ticket sales, but also tells me that these Mr. Nederlander better, you know, come and invest in black media. If he wants to see Mike win and he want to get a little of his money back, Mr. Nederlander better come on over here. It's Afternoons with Amos after these. Tomorrow, head of the library, Jackie Nenas. Next week, a whole bunch of different stuff next week. AARP is looking, they got a program to make sure people are educated properly on how to fill out their taxes. They're looking for volunteers to work with senior citizens. We'll talk to AARP on Monday. On Tuesday, the folks from Foster Grandparents and Community Action will be here. On Wednesday, we'll be live at this new development downtown called City Way. On a week from today, Citizens Energy will be here again, because y'all complaining about them bills. Your gas bill and your water bill together. So they'll be here on Thursday. Some other stuff as we go along. 21st Century Scholars. There's questions about the 21st Century Scholars program. They'll be here the second week of December. And also next week, haven't completely locked the date in yet. Hopefully next Tuesday. Folks from Indy Parks and the Indy Parks Foundation. They got new leadership. So we'll talk with them. 239-1310. 239-1310. This afternoon's name is Dr. David Hampton, about to become the new senior pastor at Light of the World Christian Church. How do you see the vision Light of the World?
Good question.
Starting after Sunday night.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the first thing is always, anytime you follow such a legendary leader of 43 years, such as Bishop Benjamin. First of all, you have to understand those shoes can't be filled. So my vision is not to fill those shoes. It's to simply follow those shoes in the mm-hmm. best way that I can. And with the Holy Spirit's leading. But we also have to make sure that we build upon the foundation that was laid. You know, in transition, it's only fitting that I should rise higher by standing on his shoulders mm-hmm. and standing on the shoulders of the ones who laid the foundation before me. So by putting them down, I lower the heights that I can reach.
Right.
So I want to try to take the church as high as it can go. And that means we have to stand upon the shoulders that were there before me. We also have to build upon the foundation. Light of the World is a church known for excellence. It's a church known for its love. Those are some of the most loving church people I've ever seen and experienced. So we want to keep that level of excellence, keep that level of love, really place a spotlight and focus always on Christ Jesus. Mm-hmm. And really soul winning is really the number one goal and focus. I think at one time Light of the World was, you know, it was really the first mega church in this city, right, as far as I understand. And so mm-hmm. we want to not so much grow in terms of numbers only, but we want, I would like to see spiritual growth as well as numerical growth, and they go hand in hand. And that means really having a heart for evangelism, seeking to save lost souls. There are plenty of unchurched non-Christians in the city of Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. And so my goal is not to to get new members, people who are just leaving other churches. I want to seek those who don't know Christ and are looking for a relationship.
You want to grow God. The base of believers.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's the task of the church. That's the mission of the church, Matthew 28.
The other mission that Light of the World has had for oh so many years is speaking out.
Right.
On issues, not just Bishop Benjamin, but his predecessor.
Absolutely.
As well. There's just
Reverend
been something.
Peoples.
Yeah, Reverend Peoples did that as well. So is that's another set of shoulders to stand on?
Absolutely. You know, and I think that was one of the things that when Bishop was looking for a successor, one of the things that I'm sure that he saw in me was my heart for the prophetic gospel, social justice, and just speaking out on issues. And I'm certainly not the only one who speaks out, but we need pastors who are willing to, you know, to speak out, about and against issues of injustice. And that's something that, you know, Bishop has done well over the years, especially in the city of Indianapolis. And I do, carry that, prior to my arrival here. That was a passion of mine. And mm-hmm. so I don't come doing that. I've already been doing that. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure if he expected that I'd go to jail 3 months after I got here. Mm-hmm. he wasn't necessarily looking for that. But, you know, I'm
but
one
does
to,
that experience help you understand your members that may get into trouble or people that get caught up in the system through no fault of their own?
Absolutely. And we as pastors have to be the voice to the voiceless, and we have to try to empower those who are powerless. And if God has given us this great venue from which to do it, the pulpit, the microphone, then we have to use it for the greatest good. And sometimes that means being unpopular. Sometimes that means doing things that are necessary, but that do not place us in a position of popularity.
In your mind, you've been here, you've been back home now a year.
Right.
Other than the challenge of bringing unchurched to the back to the church, not, you know, moving members around mm-hmm. or moving the same game pieces around, but putting new pieces on the board.
Right.
What's the other challenge in your mind the black church faces?
Well, I think the black church faces a myriad of challenges and issues. I think we are doing some great good, and I think that we have a long way to go. One of the issues is certainly education.
Mm-hmm.
That's a major issue. I just left the Hoosiers for Economic Growth down at the J.W. Marriott program prior to coming here, and just listening to now, you know, and let me say this very tactfully. I think it's great that there are many white brothers and sisters who have a heart for education and want to reform, so to speak. But my question is, where are we at the table? Where are we in those discussions? Because when we talk about education reform, these issues affect our black children.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of tired of going to various venues, functions, meetings, programs where there are very few black people around the table, and white people are deciding the outcomes of what's best for us in education. We see the films and videos of these disenfranchised black children. However, where are we at the forefront of making those decisions?
But is it also, because you was at one conference, I was at another conference this morning, and education reform mm-hmm. came up. We were talking about it in the context of the election, and I told these people, I said, education reform has been the business community of this state telling people in the state what we were supposed to have, and people in the state thinking it was in the context of just IPS or just Lake County or just Marion County or just St. Joe County. Education reform has not come from the bottom up. It seems to be coming from the top down, because what I hear from education reform from black folks is, wait a minute, y'all need to deal with special ed. You need to deal with disproportionality. You need to deal with, sentencing our kids to be thrown out of school instead of figuring out a way, if they're misbehaving but they're not breaking the law, sentence them to school. Don't sentence them away from school. Right. So the things that the bosom of the community feel are education reform. Ain't nobody talking about that. It's all, this is what. It's like the white man's burden. This is what we feel you all need to do.
Right, right. You know, and the reality is, either we're going to have to come to grips with education as either we're going to use it as a political pawn for financial purposes, and we're going to cater to unions and other political and financial entities, or mm-hmm. we're going to say that our priority is going to be children.
239. Let me go to Brenda right quick at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi, Amos. How are you today, sir?
I'm fine.
Thank you for your honesty, Amos. Every day I appreciate you when you bring the truth. Thank you for that.
Appreciate it.
Hello, Reverend Hampton. How are you today?
Hello. Good. God bless you. How are you?
I'm well, sir. Thank you for defining the issues dealing with education. Yes, I would like to be in the loop to go to some of those hearings and testimonies to give my thoughts and ideas as to where my journey has been with what is going on in public education. But this is what I want to bring to your attention, Reverend Hampton, if I may.
Yes, ma'am.
The Department of Justice, visit their website, Department of Justice. There is a story down in Mississippi where the feds have actually filed suit against the Mississippi school system, city and county offices, state offices, for the culture of school-to-prison pipeline. When you read the Department of Justice's suit against these entities, Reverend Hampton, it will make your stomach turn upside down and inside out as to what they were doing to these children, these black children and children with disabilities.
Yes.
And the reason why I'm asking you to visit this suit at the Department of Justice website, anybody can go there and read it, that it's happening right here in Indianapolis. And I am sorry to say that our people have let our children down. They have ran over our children. They have pushed our children underneath the bus just to completely run them over. We have children who are in special education right here, right now, in this city, who are being treated less than human beings. And there's people who know about this and that it's happening, but refuse to take their stand on what we need to do to push it back. Now, Amos, as you're aware of, I called your show, and there was three Republicans on your show. And when I asked them about collecting data on racial disparities, two of them said that Tony Bennett, since he's the educational reformer for the state of Indiana, this would be his puppy. But the third one indicated that we would be walking on a slippery slope to gather information having to do with racial disparities. Did they not say that, Amos?
You know, I don't know. Was this last week?
This was when they were running for election.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Now, Reverend Hampton, what I'm asking from you, sir,
mm-hmm.
is that we need to truly think about what it is that we want and where we need to go to really protect the interests of black children in this state. We need to ask for the suspension, expulsion, and criminal data regarding our children from each of these school districts in this county, in Marion County. Because what we'll find, sir, is a pattern of the culture that we're talking about, what has happened in Ohio, mm-hmm. the racial harassment that these children are under, which the Department of Justice also looked into this case here. But I'm very concerned, Reverend Hampton, about the criminalization of our youth through the educational process, where our children's rights are being deliberately denied them. They're being criminalized just so these school systems can just get rid of our children. We as a community, Reverend Hampton, I'm calling upon all the churches. in the Church of the Federation of Church and all these other religious entities, that they get behind this concern.
Mm-hmm.
By getting behind this concern, we will then see the truth. Now, I do believe that there are some individuals in the school system that need to be arrested and thrown into jail for child abuse and education neglect of our children.
Hmm.
Now, that's deep, but that's reality. I'd like to sit down and meet with you, Reverend Hampton, to bring to you what happened to my son and what has happened to many other young black children, particularly young black boys.
Well, you call the church, call Light of the World. I'd be happy to sit down and talk further with you.
Okay, you take care and peace and blessings to you.
All right, well, hold on. Before you go, Brenda, while we were sitting here talking, I just got a press release from Indiana Black Expo that says that next Tuesday they're releasing, in their words, a voluminous report that details the quality of life for black children in Indiana. That says this is arguably the most extensive study and comprehensive reports on the quality of life of Indiana's black children. A voluminous report that will be released evidently next Tuesday afternoon. Naturally, they picked a time of doing it when we're on the air, so obviously they must not want the black community to know about the state of black children in Indiana. But the state of our black youth report, which the last one they did was 5 years ago. So, Brenda, it's going to be interesting whether their consultants, which include the Polis Center at IUPUI and Engaging Solutions, even touches on some of the issues that you touch about. So that's going to be real interesting to see as part of the state of black youth that's dealt with. Anyway, I appreciate the call. Thank you. 239-1310. 239-1310 is afternoon's name. Let me take a break. We're back with our remaining moments with all of you, Pastor David Hampton. Oh, they got a whole lot of stuff going on in Light of the World tomorrow night, 7 o'clock. Circle of Prayer for our pastor over at Christian Theological Seminary, 1000 West 42nd Street. Then Saturday from 1 till 5, everybody is welcome. Since nobody's going to see Nebraska play Wisconsin down at Lucas Oil Stadium in the Big Ten Championship, you can go to Light of the World from 1 until 5. It's an open house. Everybody is welcome. Games, food, music, Zumba, jazz, vendors, community leaders, meet and greet Dr. Hampton and his family. And then on Sunday night, 5 o'clock, there's going to be the pastor installation service featuring Reverend Al Sharpton. Probably wearing one of them suits that he wears on MSNBC at 6 o'clock in the evening. It's After These with Davis, After These. All right. Back to the phones and Earl. Hi there.
Hey, how you doing?
Fine.
Hey, Dr. Hampton, I was wondering if
yes, sir.
Y'all were going to think about bringing, was y'all going to ever bring Respect Academy back to Light of the World? I got daughters like 8 and 6. They both went there. And they're, ever since they've, you know, left Respect Academy, they've been on the top of their classes.
That's excellent. And we've heard nothing but those kinds of wonderful testimonies. You know, that's something that has been talked about, and God willing, if we could either resurrect Respect Academy or do something similar, that's certainly a part of the vision. Absolutely.
All right. Appreciate it. Thank you. Let me go to Larry right quick at 239-1310. Hi there.
You know, when Brenda talks about the young black men that are being preyed on, it's pervasive now, Amos. White or black, if you're vulnerable and you meet certain requirements, you're going to be preyed on. And these charter schools have turned out to be nothing but junkie factories, because they need to have as many of their kids rated as somebody that needs help, of course, and then that's where they get their money from, the federal government, because the state's not obligated to them. So we just need to take a good, close look at what we destroyed during the Civil Rights era and be truthful with our kids, because when they find out the truth, they're going to turn on us, and that's what's going to – they're justified in doing so. But to keep calling and complaining about what is apparent, you're not going to be able to do anything about it by sitting down at a conference or anything of the sort. So we might as well admit what's happening and get that out there in the press, and just admit and maybe in some way agree with our enemy, so that they can see the wrong and the terrorizing that they're doing to our community. But we invite it on our own self.
All right, I appreciate it. Thank you. Let me go to Reggie at 239-1310. Hi there.
Yeah.
Reggie, you're on the air.
Yeah, Amos.
Yes.
First of all, Pastor Hampton, welcome to the community.
Thank you. Bless you.
Your record speaks for itself. It's great dialogue going on about our children and what's happening in the school system, but it's been happening all along. We have not yet addressed culture competency. Mm. Until that's addressed, until that's insisted in terms of educating our children, we have nothing. Expulsion rates are very high, and it's almost reconstruction of Jim Crow. And we're not admitting it. When you have black educators that say, don't call me Afro-American, call me black, because they don't want to identify with Africa, I mean, something's wrong. And when you have teachers that's coming out of a racist attitude in terms of education, white or black, it hurts our children. So it needs to be some sensitizing, identifying, and recorrecting. We can talk about charter schools. We can talk about IPS. We can talk about all of those things. But until the whole reform of education in terms of what's happening to black youth all across the border, all across, it has to be culture competent.
And Reverend Hampton is probably answering your own question why there are no black faces at those tables, because they don't see that some of these issues are school reform in the minds of folks in the African American community.
Right. Yeah. And to further piggyback off of what the brother said in very, very eloquent words, you know, when we talk about education reform, not only do we need to take the initiative in our own community, but this is a nonpartisan issue. Mm-hmm. The education of America, we are behind in the world. And so we're not competing with China. We're not competing with Europe. And that ought to be a concern for the United States, not just African Americans. So we all have to participate in this discussion.
But one of the things, Reggie, that is interesting since the election, the school reformers can't understand how their hero lost, Tony Bennett. And they can't understand how reformers in IPS won. And I keep telling them the same people that voted for the reformers in IPS voted against Tony Bennett. And they can't figure that out.
There's a correlation.
So until they, when they figure it out, maybe they'll, you know, embrace us. Let me go to Brother Kareem right quick at 239-1310.
Yeah, how you doing?
I'm fine.
You know, I heard what the Reverend said, but I'm going to say disagree with him intelligently. It is an African-American concern. Let me show you something on history, my brother. Mm-hmm. The fact that you said African-American, do you know that there's two continents? And in the history in itself, as identity, as birthright and nationality, that makes that concept null and void, because you cannot be that of two continents alone. What I'm saying is the miseducation of the American so-called people that are natural on land has been so just onslaught, just miseducated the people to who they are. That's why we can't compete with China, Japan, Korea. And what I'm saying is they know who they are. They have no problem with the identity of themselves in the geographical location that they live in. Here, we got a melting pot of a bunch of ethnic groups here that are feeding off the main people that were here first. We the underdogs in the prison, in the system, in the education system and everything, and that alone warrants reform in education. For instance, should be an intelligent inquiry in the justice and law that's being taught in the United States of America. You got an economy that done bottom out, and the only way they can bring it back to order is locking young boys up in jail and young black boys and sisters in jail, so they can get the federal funds to trickle down to the municipal courts. My brother Reverend, I understand what you're trying to do, but reform, what kind of reform are you talking about? You talking about reform for the corporations, or you talking about reform for the indigenous people of the land? Who are you talking about reform? Can you please give me clarity on that? Because until that happens, until we know what really right, went down in America since 1776 till today,
all right, let me let Dr. Hampton respond.
Well, we're getting kind of deep. I'm just trying to get installed on Sunday, but I do appreciate this rich conversation. I appreciate your comments too, brother. I don't want you to be confused by what I was saying. I was saying the issue for us as a community. Black people, African Americans, whatever we want to call ourselves, we have to take the onus upon ourselves to do for self. Now, the issue of education is for America is universal. It's nonpartisan. It's not just black or white. We are behind as a country, period. And as African Americans, we have to realize how even further we are behind as a people. And it's time for us to stop begging, stop asking. We have the power within our own community. If we band together, we can do it. And, when we talk about education in the black church, our black colleges were birthed out of the church. Bethune-Cookman, Florida A&M, any black college was birthed out of the black church. And so that's why I feel that the church is a great place to start. We have enough pastors, great pastors in this community. When we gather the conversation table, we can reform in whatever way we deem necessary to close the education gap. That is the problem. Either it's the system that's failing our children, or it's our community that's failing our children. Perhaps it's both. Some kind of reform needs to happen, because a 40% graduation rate is not acceptable.
All right. By Sunday, once Reverend Al Sharpton opens up the door to church, he'll be the new senior pastor of Light of the World Christian Church. He is Dr. David Hampton.
Amen.
And there's all kind of things tomorrow. 7 o'clock, Circle of Prayer over at Christian Theological Seminary in the Shelton Auditorium, 1000 West 42nd Street. Saturday, 1 to 5, everybody turn out at Light of the World for Community Day at the Light. It's free. And you're going to have a whole lot of fun. And then Sunday, 5 o'clock is the installation service. Formal program starts at 6. Reverend Al Sharpton, National Action Network, MSNBC, friend of presidents, live at Light of the World. First time he's been at Light of the World in a while. So y'all need to pack the place. Anyway, Dr. David Hampton, thanks very much. We'll be back with our immediate moments this afternoon with them, this after these.